Hi, this is Joanne Brooke Hyland, founder and creator of Circle in Bloom. This is week 9 of our How Einstein Would Get Pregnant blog series, a fun and educational way to think about how our brain affects our body with respect to our reproductive health. Last week, I hope you joined us in week 8. We did a special session for November, which is Adoption Awareness Month, and had a very special guest on the show, Stephanie Clark Fitzgerald, who shared with us her adoption story. They recently adopted a week old baby from Florida. And if you haven't had a chance to listen, I do strongly recommend. It's a really a beautiful story, one of determination, a lot of courage, and ultimately love as they're able to share now their lives with this wonderful little baby. So check back if you are thinking about adoption, and you know, definitely recommend to listen to that. This week, what we intend to do is come back to our quote-unquote brainy topic of the mind-body, brain-body connection as it pertains to our bodies and our fertility. And this week, we pose a question, which is, if there is such a thing, of course, as we propose there is, and lots of research suggests that this is so, which is that there's a mind-body connection. And a lot of the research looks at the effects of emotions and feelings that work on our body. But what about the opposite discussion there, which would be the body-mind connection working upwards, if you think about your body and your head, just for simplicity purposes? And the way your body may feel, whether it's in a state of balance or a state of imbalance, if you're sick, how does that affect your feelings and your thoughts? And what I would propose is that just like there is a mind-body downward connection, that there's also an upward connection as well. And I recently wrote actually an article for Resolve New England newsletter entitled Relaxicize, the New Fertility Regimen, which looked at and discussed the merits of how relaxation, just like we exercise for our bodies, which is an exercise, you know, mainly opens our blood vessels, kind of improves our circulation, it reduces our heart rate, it makes us happy. All of these effects of exercise are, you know, clear, and we all know that to be the case. But what about the effects of relaxing? And so we kind of combined the words and called it relaxicize, because in effect, you do get the same benefits when you consciously take the time to relax your mind and your body, which is what we are all about within Circle and Bloom. Our programs are all about relaxation, relaxing your body and your mind, and using visualizations to really help your body find its way back to balance for reproductive health. And so what we proposed is, when you do relax, circulation goes up, your body feels more in harmony, just like when you exercise, your blood rate or your heart rate and your blood pressure go down and you feel better. So, you know, I propose that in 10 years or in some, you know, amount of time, just like we make time in our daily lives to exercise, I think that it's going to become more and more prevalent that we make time in our lives to relaxicize. But it leads me back to this week's topic, which is this body-mind connection. And when we talk about all of the evidence that supports this role of emotions and thoughts in causing illness, I recently read a book called Miracle Cures by Robert A. Scott, which, if you're interested in the role of spirituality and religion, which we are, by the way, and I would like to cover more of this as we proceed through our blog series, but this book really kind of looks at the history of the role of religion in, you know, in helping people kind of cure themselves. And he looked, you know, at the at the advances in biotechnology and medicine and what we know today versus what was happening back then. And anyway, it's a very interesting book. But what he writes in his book is, you know, the link between negative emotions and poor health is a powerful one. And he's not just talking about today, he's talking about the history of, you know, of medical records as we, you know, as we were able to study them. And he says that studies find that people who tend to inhibit the expression of emotions generally have poorer health than those with less repressive inhibited styles of coping. And then also strong relationships have been found between if you're really angry or hostile in the incidence of coronary heart disease, cancer, and arthritis. And also links between extreme sadness, such as in bereavement, to heart disease and, again, cancer. And he also links pessimism and hopelessness to ill health. A lot of negativity just expressed in those past couple of sentences. But the point is that, you know, we've talked about this many times in the past, and I'm sure we will, but the connection and the studies that really show this link, showing, again, the emotional impact on our health in a negative and positive way. But what I propose in this particular week is that, again, these studies assume that there's a very head-down link. The mind and the brain, which presumably have these emotions and thoughts, subsequently impact the body in alarming ways. So is it also possible to assume that the body, if it has these illnesses or imbalances, subsequently impact the mind in equally alarming ways, kind of causing this downward spiral? If the body is first sick, therefore, does the mind become sick, and therefore the body becomes sicker still? So it's kind of a chicken and an egg situation. And I'm not suggesting I have the answer, but what I'd like to do is look at some specific life situations to maybe talk about, you know, an answer, or at least point us in the right direction. And, you know, it's clear, for example, in dramatic instances when we are sick with the flu, for instance, that we, you know, literally feel miserable, right, in our body, and not just in the body, but I also would propose in our thoughts and our feelings, because when we're sick with the flu, we aren't jovial, nor are we smiling, or nor are we thinking about our big life goals in an optimistic way. This is an obvious example, but I think it does show the direct correlation of this bottoms up or body to mind idea. I also recently read a book, and not to be completely on this spirituality theme, but Barbara Bradley Haggerty wrote a book called Fingerprints of God: What Science is Learning About the Brain and Spiritual Experience. And what she says is, you know, we often underestimate the effects of just relaxing your muscles. And if you get a good massage and you suddenly say, hey, the rest of my life is good. Our bodies are often overlooked, except when we are sick. Do we take enough time during the day to kind of check in with our body, ask it questions, and help it release anxiety and tension in areas? And let me proceed a little bit further with this whole concept of thinking about simple examples. And we're going to talk about meditating, we're going to talk about exercise, sleep, and diet. And regarding meditation, first of all, I was listening recently to a recording by Jack Kornfield, and he was talking about meditating. And he said that he encounters a lot of people that when they begin meditating, they find discomfort in certain areas of their bodies. And it seems what he proposes is that when your thoughts go quiet, the mind or your intuition can actually begin to hear or feel what your body is saying. And obviously, this is important information to act upon. This communication within your mind-body is a two-way highway. And tapping into your body using such methods as meditating or relaxation or even taking a warm bath can truly be enlightening. And then exercise, another simple example is one of exercise, yoga, stretching and using your muscles, which may be painful at first, or while you're doing it, it may not be fun, but I guarantee that there will be positive emotional benefits after you exercise, maybe even during your exercise. I think it depends on where you are in your exercise regime. For example, runner's high. I think only runner's high come when, you know, you've been running for a while. But this is your body telling you that it is happy when it is active. The biomechanics underlying this cascade in your, you know, kind of first involve various hormones such as opiates and cellular receptors, endocrine glands in your brain, thyroid, adrenal glands, send all of these positive molecules of emotion to a myriad of cells in your body using their cell surface receptors. I propose it's a thunderburst of positive emotions that can be released through the stretching and exercising of your body. Again, a direct correlation between the health of your body and your emotional outlook and your feelings, which I think is an upward, wonderful spiral that that really puts you in charge. Or take a day when you haven't slept well the night before. Your body is under duress due to profound fatigue. You know, every single area of your body is impacted by sleep or lack thereof. And how would you rate your level of happiness during this day if you are really, really tired? You know, I would probably propose it would be low. Another example of this body-mind connection. And your diet also plays an enormous role in your energy levels and state of well-being. So on a summary note, and I would raise this other question, and it relates directly to infertility, on a more profound level, and I don't have the answer for this, but what do certain conditions like PCOS, endometriosis, a blocked fallopian tubes, or any other myriad of specific fertility-related or even not fertility-related health issues, do they produce some kind of impact on this body-mind connection, whether it's subconscious or not? And research has linked higher rates of depression with PCOS, for example. But again, does this mean that the mind does react to these conditions from a physical perspective? Again, I don't have the answer. It's a very interesting question, though. So when we talk about the health, and then just I'm going to wrap this up. I do believe, again, that the health of the mind and body are interconnected, not just from a heads-down approach, but from a circular flow of complex interconnections. The balancing of the body or our health may improve our thoughts and feelings, which in turn boosts our immune system and keeps your body healthy. But unfortunately, the opposite may be true as well. But we can access mind-body health not just from the release of emotions or improving our thoughts, which is sometimes very, very difficult to do, but by checking in with your body and helping it find balance as well. And I think both tactics are very empowering because they put you in charge. It gives you something you can do to help your health, to help your life and your fertility and your future. So that concludes this week, week 9. Next week, we're going to do a little holiday cheer and discuss baby making, sex, and libido. So that should be a fun week. I hope you check back. And please subscribe to our podcast and check back to our blog at circlebloom.com/blog. And if you haven't already taken a gander at our fertility relaxation programs, please do so as well. Thank you for listening. Again, this is Joanne Verkuylen.